I'm speaking of Radha. Who is Radha? Who am I? She's so high. And I'm in the gutter of material desire, samsara vasana. So I don't understand. Logically, it doesn't seem to make any sense. But it tastes good. Is that a good reason, philosophically? It tastes good. Philosophically, no, it's not a good reason at all. Because what happens to what tastes good? What do you know from Bhagavad Gita? What do you know? Vishayendriya samyogam. Parinhame. What am I? Yatadagre vishamiva parinhame. No, that's in the mode. Vishayendriya samyogam yatadagre mritopamam parinhame vishamiva tatsukam rajasam smritam. The happiness that comes of contact with the senses and the sense object seems like nectar in the beginning. It tastes good, but it turns to poison, that is happiness, in the mode of passion. And furthermore, yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yone evate adyantavanta konte anateshu ramate buddhaha. Happiness which is derived from, same thing, the interaction of the senses with the sense objects, that enjoyment, that is the cause of all distress, beginning, middle and end, and therefore intelligent people don't take part in it. Therefore, it's not at all a philosophical thing to say that it tastes good, so let's go for it. That love, what are you talking about? Love, atendriya priti vancha, tare bole kam, the love which is actually the lusty desire for enjoying one's senses. That has a specific object. A man loves a woman loves a man. Maybe a man loves a man, it's very prominent, or a woman loves a woman sensually. A donkey loves a she-donkey. Love? I don't know. Well, there may be love also. You see the birds, they come together. Some birds, I think most of them, they have partners and they love each other. Seems like that. If one happens to die, the other becomes very distressed. But it's all based on sensual contact. But it is specific. It's not like the love which the impersonalists talk about. Because they see that specific love, it leads to distress. It's philosophical understanding and philosophy, it's anyone can see. Everyone sees, but it's pashyanapi na pashyati. We see, but we don't see. See, but we don't see means that we don't want to see because it tastes good and we don't know anything better. But those who are philosophical, they see this is all suffering, therefore stop loving. That sounds too harsh. Therefore, they say, well, we love everyone. We have cosmic love for everything and everyone. Or Buddhism, especially Mahayana Buddhism. Compassion. This word compassion is very popular nowadays. That's the buzzword of Mahayana Buddhists, that you don't have to go all through all this difficult meditation that Buddha taught, just Buddha loves you. That's all. Or new age, feeling for others, for everything. The Buddha, but this compassion, what kind of compassion is that? Where love means one person loves another, and you may have some phantasmagorial idea of loving everything and everyone without loving Krishna. But the first thing he tells you is that you're not a person. Anatma, there's no eternal living being. You don't exist. And the ultimate goal is to enter into non-existence. So I love my wife, but you don't exist. And I don't exist. And the love doesn't exist. Nothing exists. And you can't say it is, you can't say it exists, and you can't say it doesn't exist. And go on. I don't like this. It's so much doesn't exist that you can't even imagine it. Something which is actually non-existent, you can't imagine it, just like a svakalpa. What is a svakalpa? Can you imagine? No. It doesn't exist. You can make up any funny words. Maybe it means something in some language, but you can make up any kind of word. Or you can have impossibility. There must be some philosophical term for this. We'll just say impossibility. A square circle. Can you imagine a square circle? That's linguistic bamboozlement to talk about a square circle. But love means specific. And love between Radha and Krishna is specific. It means that Radha loves Krishna. There's a specific object of that love. It's not just you love buzzing around in the Brahmajyoti, or you become the Brahmajyoti and you pure consciousness, which is nonsense. Pure consciousness, your consciousness of what? Consciousness means you have to be conscious of something. This Descartes said, cogito ergo sum. I'm cognizant, I think, therefore I exist. But he has to be cognizant of something, that he's of himself. But if he thinks that I exist, then what he thinks about I, that I-ness is separate from what he's thinking of. You get what I mean? So there are already two things. We start off with duality right at the beginning. So this idea of cosmic consciousness, we are conscious, but you're not conscious of anything. That means you're unconscious. When you're unconscious, you're not conscious of anything. That's the simple definition of unconscious. So Radha, Krishna, Prem, the object is, subject, object, is Krishna. Technically, Krishna is the object of love for all living beings. The technical language, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm not making this all up. All these things I've been speaking in the last few days, a lot of it is Chaitanya Charitamrita topics. Not the Buddhism. We also have to, in our own small way, assist Srila Prabhupada in his mission of nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatadesha tarne, delivering the Western world from impersonalism and voidism. Where is the West? We're not in the West, we're in India, right? Well, paschatya loke shabmura anacha. The West, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, is where everyone is a murha, a fool, and doesn't behave properly. So, India has become the West also. Everything's the West. We should look to the East, the rising sun. Vande Shri Krishna, Chaitanya Nityanando, Sahodito, Godo Deye, Pushpavanto, Chitro, Shando, Tamonito. They have arisen on the horizon of Gaura, that's the beginning of the world, begins on the horizon of Gaura. They've arisen to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. And not, they're not Buddhists. They came to teach us about Radha and Krishna. Krishna is the object of love for everyone, except one person. Who is that one person? Krishna. Krishna is in love with Radha, particularly. He loves everyone. But particularly he's in love with Radha. Therefore she's called the Ashraya of his love. She's the where it gets reposed. But it's round the other way for Radha. For Krishna, it's round the other way for Krishna. Radha is the object of his love and he is the Ashraya. He is the repose, or where it exists. It exists, Radha Prem exists in Krishna, but ontologically everyone loves Krishna. And then we come there, discussions of gopis who love Krishna and Radha the same, and some love Radha more, and these become very esoteric topics. No, Krishna, he has a specific object of love. If you say cosmic love, then you don't get caught in all this Vishayendriya Samyogam. Yeah, you get caught up in thinking it's bliss, but eventually you have to suffer. You don't get caught in it. Just love everyone and feeling of love for everything and everyone. But no, don't get too specific. But love, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us, is specific. And the specific object of love for everyone is Krishna. And the supreme lover is Sri Radha. And Krishna enjoys his senses. Atendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam. When we try to enjoy our own senses by not focusing our love on Krishna, or even if we try to enjoy Krishna, that's also possible. That's also called lust. Therefore, Kubja's attraction to Krishna, that was not pure. She was also attracted to Krishna, but for the sake of her own sense gratification. But Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Premana. If we Atendriya Priti Vanchatare Balekam Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Premanam. Love means to satisfy Krishna's senses. So it's going on. The sense enjoyment means there are objects to enjoy. It's not impersonal. It's not just all one. Krishna enjoys Radha's form, to see her, to touch her, to taste her lips, to taste the food she cooks, everything. Madhuradhipater akilam madhuram. He is the Lord of sweetness and everything about him is sweet. But he's also God, which means that he has to sometimes punish. So he's not always sweet. He gets his sweetness from Radha. She's always sweet. She doesn't punish anyone, except sometimes she punishes Krishna because he gets out of control sometimes. But that's not for very long. So there are specific objects of Krishna's love. And everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. As long as we are trying to enjoy this material world, then we see it as an arena for our enjoyment. And then when we see in Krishna consciousness, Everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. It's not that we give up the world. We can't give up the world. We can try to give up samsara vasana, the desires for enjoying this world, but we can't give up the world. The idea of giving up the world is better than trying to enjoy the world. The example is given that someone may drop his purse on the ground and one person picks it up, sticks it in his own pocket and takes the money to enjoy for himself. So he's a rascal. He's a sense enjoyer. Then someone else will say, no, it doesn't belong to me. I won't touch it. So he's better. He's a moral person. He doesn't want to enjoy that which is not meant for him. But the best person is someone who picks it up, finds the owner and returns it. We should know that everything is meant for Krishna. Not that Krishna lost anything, but we lost it. We lost our sense of Krishna consciousness. Everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So Krishna's Vishayendriya Samyogam Yattadagre Mritopamam Pariname Amritam. It becomes more Anandam Buddhivardhanam. By chanting Hare Krishna, we become plunged in the ocean of bliss, which is ever increasing. And we also increase Krishna's happiness. Krishna becomes pleased when we chant his holy names. And what are we chanting? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hey Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. So anything which seems sweet in this material world turns to poison. But with Krishna, Radha Krishna love, the enjoyment, it doesn't become stale. It becomes fresher and fresher and fresher. That's real love. Real love. This way the Mayavadis are way ahead of the Buddhists because they have some idea of love. Not much expressed actually in Shankara's teachings, but it's extrapolated later. There's some idea of love, love for all beings. Even Buddha, I can never understand, if you get nirvana, why do you bother about trying to get other people into it? If nothing, if it doesn't, it doesn't exist, it doesn't not exist, blah, 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 you can't say it exists, you can't say it. Why do you bother? Or the atheists, like the Dawkins and company, they say, well, everything's just like we have our Dr. Ramesh doctors. Everything's just energy, you see. Physics proves everything's just energy. So why bother? Why bother becoming liberated? Why bother trying to make the world a better place? It's just all atoms floating around. Our existence is just some idea that there's no actual existence. It's just a conglomerate of energy, that's all, which doesn't really exist. Pain and pleasure, there's no meaning to there's no meaning to it, there's no purpose in the universe. Satyam apratishtam te jagad ahura nishvara. So why do they bother? I saw once, a few years ago, there were all these atheism debates that were going on. It was quite popular at the time. And Christopher Hitchens, one of the great atheists of the time, he was asked at the end of a talk in America, although he's from Britain, Christopher Hitchens, RIP, rest in peace, probably not very peaceful. He departed to the land of nowhere, he didn't go anywhere, and he wasn't a Buddhist. He believed that when the body is dead, everything is finished. He's wrong, but anyway, he was asked. Someone asked him, well, why do you bother? If you're an atheist, why do you bother going around and speaking? The person didn't articulate the question more. And he said, well, you see, he replied, you see, there's all this Islamic terrorism, so we have to counter this idea that there's a God. because it's causing so much problem in the world. He did not like to be called an atheist. He said, I'm not an atheist, I'm an anti-theist. So why do they bother? Why do they bother? Why do we bother? Yes, we should be bothered. We should be bothered with every single detail. There's an English saying, the devil is in the details. I don't know exactly the source of it, but the real saying should be, Krishna is in the details. If we want to serve Krishna nicely, we have to see every detail is nice. No inconvenience for Krishna. Krishna has Shatakoti Gopi, that's an underestimate, but it gives some idea. He has 100 times 10,000 million, that's a billion, gopis, and more. Just to make sure every detail's correct. It's like in a delicate operation, whether it's a surgical operation or some... Say you just happen to be fiddling around in your backyard and you're making a nuclear bomb. It has to be exactly right, otherwise it won't work. So let's say a chemical plant. You better edit that out, otherwise they'll arrest me and come and check and see if we're making nuclear bombs here. We're not. Hope you believe us. Anyway, if there's a nuclear bomb, we're all going to die anyway, and there's nothing after that, according to the people who make the nuclear bombs. So, what does it matter whether we get killed now or... Anyway, Hare Krishna, no nuclear bombs. in a chemical plant, you have someone to check, right? Someone does it, but there has to be a always have to check, see everything's in order before you put a... Every time a plane flies in the sky, except it seems in the times of the Soviet Union, when their planes were always falling out of the sky, every time everything has to be checked, every little bolt, everything has to be checked very carefully, because if it's a little bit wrong, then you're in the newspaper the next day, or in the Soviet Union it wouldn't get published. Little bit, if it's a little bit imbalanced, it has to be just exactly balanced. Otherwise, the plane crashes. Every balance and so many different things. Little bit going, a tiny little leak in the fuel supply, and everything. So, all the details. You have to see. So everything has to be very, very exactly perfect for Krishna. There should be no inconvenience whatsoever. This Srila Bhakti Rakshak Shrita Maharaj, and we find in one of his books that he says that if there's a little drop of perspiration on Krishna's forehead, and Mother Yashoda sees that, she's prepared to die a million times to remove that little drop of perspiration. Because if it's just causing a little bit of disturbance. So Krishna has so many gopis to check, put everything in order, make everything nice, so that he can lie down very peacefully and nicely with Radha, and they will enjoy. They make nice flower lying down place. In Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't lie on a snake. He does actually at Kosi. There's the Sheshashayi temple. He's lying on the snake. Otherwise, generally he lies on a snake, right? They have these beds which are just made nicely, so that when you lie down, it's just perfectly comfortable. The best bed is a snake. Just perfect for lying down. But that's for Krishna. But he does, yeah. There's also at Kosi in the north of the Rajamandala, there's the temple of Lakshmi Narayana, where Krishna one time was boasting. You see, I'm God. Yeah. You know, you're always saying things like that. So he lay down, Balaram took the form of Anantashesh, and then Radha took the form of Lakshmi and started massaging his feet. Everything's in Vrindavan. But that's just at the edge. Lakshmi's on the other side of the river. She's standing there on the other side of the river, watching the Rasalila, thinking, I couldn't join. I couldn't join. So Krishna pastimes, it's factual. This is Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. You read the Bhagavad Gita and come to the conclusion that everything is impersonal. And Vedya says, no. Dharma Projita Kaitava Atra. Kick out all this rubbish here and come to the real Vedyam Vastavam. The real Vedyam Vastavam is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has become mad chasing after, where is Radha? Esho esho Radhe, Dake esham. This is the Vedam. He gives a hint in the next verse. Pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhava. He gives some hint of that. This is specific love, real love. This is what we're all searching for. Radha and Krishna are real. This is reality. Reality, yeah, there's impersonal Brahman also, but that Brahman effulgence in the third verse, I said yesterday, fourth verse, third verse, Yadadvaitam Brahmopanishade tadapyasya tanu bha. That Brahman effulgence, that jyoti, yeah, it's real, but there's a source of that light also. And what is the source of that light? That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Ekatmana apibhuvi pura deha bhedam gatoto. Radha Krishna. He is the joint form of Radha and Krishna. So this is real. Radha and Krishna are real. We only have a sense of being real. Why? What did the Buddhists say? It's all some complex misunderstanding. No. We have a sense of being real because ultimately we are real. We are part and mamaivangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, because we are part and parcel of the ultimate real, who is Krishna. And the love between Radha and Krishna, that is eternal and ever-increasing. It's not real love if it's not eternal. In this material world, love is always broken at the latest by death. In the wedding ceremony in English, in the churches, there's that you're coming together in the church of God, and you have to vow to stay together in riches and poverty, in good times and bad times, and this and this and that and that. And the last line is, until death us do part. So they know. At least they reckon, death will part us. At the latest, death will part us. So that's, well, it's love, but it's limited by time. And I guess most people nowadays, if they bother to marry at all, they don't do it in a church because they already made a divorce contract. A marriage contract, sorry, in which they say, well, just if we happen to divorce, then to save the legal hassles in future, we'll make a clause that you get this much, I get this much, and I won't claim anything else. So what are they going to say? That I vow to stay with you, we'll live together in wealth or in weal, and so on until death. They're already at the marriage, he's looking at some other girl, she's looking at some other man and saying, oh, I'll try this out for a few months and then they look pretty good. It doesn't matter if they're married to someone else. And it goes on like that. But Radha and Krishna love, that is real. This is the actual reality. It's tangible. Solid, if you like. Well, love is not really solid, but it's more liquid, right? So it's flowing. It's not stiff or stuck in one place or one position. It's tangible, it's real, it's attainable. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells us. It's not just something that we hear about and that we think about, or that is something somewhere a long way away and it's got nothing to do with me. It is attainable. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, we can join Radha and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to one of the songs, in this that Songs of the Vaishnavacharya, I think it's a Gaurangara Duti Pada. He says that the aim of this Krishna consciousness movement is to join Radha and Krishna in their pleasure dance. So it is attainable. We can join in. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to invite us. Krishna comes to show us how enjoyable his pastimes are. I've been telling you, love is pain, but it's enjoyment. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you come and join. We're talking all this time about Radha and Krishna, the love. What does love mean? It means the infatuation. You know the Tamil word for infatuation? It means what when people love each other in the beginning. they can't think of anything else. And in respectable Hindu families, you don't get that anyway. It's the infatuation love, that's the Vishayendriya Samyogam type of love, where it starts off, and just dies down until it fades out. But the respectable Hindu families, it starts off steady and it continues steady. That's the traditional model. So love, Radha and Krishna are completely infatuated with each other. So where do we fit in there? Well, they're so, Krishna is so kind, Radha is so kind. Even though they're completely absorbed in each other, they also want to invite us. They have a thought for us also. Even though Krishna never thinks about anything but Radha ever, he also thinks about us. And that's a contradiction. But he's Krishna, right? So he can contradict himself as much as he likes. He can do both things at once. In Vrindavan, Krishna's performing his pastimes. He forgets he's God, right? That's Vrindavan Leela. But every so often he does something like killing a demon, swallowing forest fires. It means he didn't forget he's God. So what is it? Does he remember he's God or he doesn't remember he's God? Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells us, you can't say it is and you can't say it isn't. It's both. It's impossible. Great. That's why we worship Krishna. If we could understand him, what would be the use of him being God? We got everything worked out. Yeah. Don't worry. Everything under control. Everything worked out. Yeah. Okay. You can maybe say that about the impersonal Brahman. Maybe even about Paramatma. Not even about Vaikunthanath. What to speak about Krishna? You can't understand everything. Anyway, that was the introduction to today's talk, because I wanted to, and it's on. Anyway, I wanted to get back to some things which I stated before. Yeah, we finished yesterday quoting that Gopianu Gatya Bina Aisharja Gyane Bajileho Napai Brajendra Nandane. that if one worships Krishna without taking shelter, without following in the footsteps of the gopis, and worships Krishna in a mood of opulence, you know, with knowledge of his opulences, then one cannot attain Krishna in Vrindavan. And the aim of this Krishna consciousness movement is to join the pleasure dance. It may be not exactly joining directly as a dancer, but just like in the army, every soldier needs 10 men behind him. You need people to put his boots on, make the boots, supply the boots, supply him food, which is not so easy on a battlefield. The guns have to be kept in good order. Of course, the soldiers are trained in basic things like that themselves, but you need someone to... there's so many things, administration, doctors, engineers. So for every gopi, you need assistant gopis, and you need someone to play the music also. And apart from the gopis, when does Krishna perform his Rasalila? That we find in the beginning of the chapter of Bhagavatam. I can't remember the Sanskrit just now, but then Krishna saw the Sharad Purnima, the moon is rising very beautifully over Vrindavan, and the atmosphere is very nice with the cool wind blowing in the evening, the cool wind blowing off the Yamuna, and there's so the birds are chirping very nicely. It takes a whole atmosphere. So you need a moon. There's no moon in the spiritual world, Krishna says, in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, there is. There has to be. What's the resolution of that contradiction? Maybe you can ask Krishna when we see him. I don't know exactly. Anyway, there's a moon, the full moon, very nice atmosphere. Then Krishna decided, yes, this is a very nice night for dancing. Just nice. And that they also do in the villages in India, especially they have that Navratri in Gujarat is very famous, Dandiya Ras. It's just at that season. It's still hot in the day, but it's cool at night. It needs to be a little cool at night, because when you dance, you get very hot. So everything. So you also need birds chirping nicely. You also need grass. They're not going to dance on rocks. Of course, sometimes they dance on Govardhan Hill also, but that's not all rock. They're nice Surya Sava. There's nice grass for the cows and for the gopis to dance with Krishna also. So there are so many things. We see the birds here, all the way as this temple is being constructed. It's just at the edge of the city, so we have the fields all around, and there are so many birds. I don't know the names. It'd be good to know the names. Some parrots are here now. Not many. You remember Vada Vidyanaga? Every morning, thousands of parrots. Here there are only six or seven. No, not six or seven, six or eight. They come in twos. Then Maina, they're everywhere. They're all over the place. And you won't hear them at this season, but there's the kokil. They're making so there's the kingfisher there. I don't know what they're in the well. And there are the tailor birds. I don't know. They make their nest hanging down from the tree. So it all makes a very pleasing atmosphere. The birds, they seem very happy. They don't care what we're doing. They don't care whether DMK gets voted or AIA, DMK. They don't give a damn about all that. They don't know anything about coronavirus. They're not quarantined. They're just doing that. They seem to be very happy. The birds arise in the morning and they get up early in the morning. What do? They're singing very sweetly. Makes a nice chorus. They're practicing because they have to go to Vrindavan. They're calling Krishna, you could come here also. And he came. He's coming. Ah, so you can be a bird in Vrindavan also. To be a bird in Vrindavan, don't think it's a small thing. You see, this Uddhava kind of Vrindavan, the topmost devotee in Dwaraka, and above this material world is the Brahma Jyoti, then there's Vaikuntha, then there's Ayodhya, Mathura, highest position, Dwaraka, and the highest devotee is Uddhava. And he came to Vrindavan, and he thought, when he found out what was going on, he found out, I'll better be some clump of grass, so I can get the gopis' lotus feet on my head. So it's not a small thing to be a grass in Vrindavan. It's a very big thing. That just shows how the Vrindavan is so much superior to all other abodes, that the Shantaras of Vrindavan is more elevated than the Madhuras of anywhere else. It's inconceivable. Simply inconceivable. Shall I go on? You're talking about Uddhava. Somehow got back to Uddhava. He's still there in Vrindavan. He managed to get a spot in Vrindavan. Uddhava came to console the gopis who were suffering in the pain of separation from Krishna. And Krishna was suffering, thinking of them. So he sent from Mathura. Sent Uddhava to tell them, to tell the gopis, don't worry, don't worry, everything's okay. Krishna's God. He loves you. Everything will be all right. And the gopis are saying, yeah, we know he loves us, and that's all right, but where is he? If he loves us, why does he come here? We don't want philosophy. We want him. So Uddhava spent 10 months, first he came and spoke philosophy. Yeah, this is right. Because he's a philosopher, he learned from Brihaspati. He came, I'll speak, very good philosophy. Yeah, that will convince them. It's Krishna's message, and I'm his dearmost devotee, he thought, until he went to Vrindavan. I'm his dearmost devotee, and I'll go and give them philosophy, and then they'll understand. Then everything will be all right. So he spoke philosophy, they said, we don't want this philosophy. Then he spent 10 months in Vrindavan, forgot no more philosophy. Just talking about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's qualities. That, and then he was learning from them. He came to teach them, and he ended up learning. What is that? There's a saying, I came to scoff, but I stayed to pray. There's a saying. It's not exactly applicable here, but a little bit applicable. Philosophy didn't work. Philosophy can get you as far as Shantarasa, if one has a very philosophical approach. One can come to Shantarasa, but the Shantarasa in Vrindavan is better than that position. Uddhava wanted to take that position of some herbs or a clump of grass so he could get the gopis. Not philosophical. He could get the dust of their feet. Not of Krishna. Krishna, yes, he'll get also. But he wanted the gopis. he wanted the gopis. Foot dust on his head. So this Shantaras in Vrindavan, the birds, every Kujat Kokila, Hangsa Sarasa Gana Kirne Mayuru Kule. It's all filled up. Vrindavan is filled up. There's some birds I mentioned, and then the trees. The trees are great personalities. They're bowing down to offer Balaram their different fruits and flowers. The gopis were not impressed. Not at all interested. Yeah, okay, yeah, he's God. How is that going to help us? He's got so many other things to do. Being God, he's got to look after the whole universe, and especially the Yadus and this and that. He's got so many others to look after and think about, but we don't have anyone but him. What is our position? We're not Brahma, Varunendra, Rudra, Maruta. We're not going to start praising him like that. And where Vedai Sangha Padakrama Kramo Panishadarga Yanti Yang Samagaha, all the Vedas are praising Krishna. Well, they also came and joined us, right? The Vedas, they became gopis. So what are you talking all this Vedic knowledge, but when you really understand the Vedas, my dear Uddhava, then you come and join us. Become a gopi. Maybe there are so many gopis. Somewhere in Mithila, the young girls, when Rama came, they saw Rama, but he's only going to marry Sita. So they also desired him. Similarly in Dandakaranya, so many rishis, they saw Rama and thought, oh, we'd like to relate with you as Sita does. Okay, next time. Just wait a little bit. I'll be back soon. You could marry me then. And so many Rishichari, Munichari, they became. And so Krishna, every time he's so lusty after women, he keeps on taking his pastimes in different universes and picking up more and more gopis every time. So where are we going to fit? There's room for everyone. He's dancing with all the gopis, and everyone thinks that he's just dancing with me. And it's an unlimited number, and it's always increasing. That's Krishna's mercy. So there is a chance to join that. But the gopis, when you get there, then there's no more study the Vedas, this philosophy, svata pramana, parata pramana. The parrots do at Mahishmati, when the young Shankara came to Mahishmati on the Narmada, the holy river Narmada. Then he was looking for the house of Mandana Mishra, the great Mimamsa exponent, and he asked some village women were there. See, he was a sannyasi, but he could speak with the local women. It was allowed. Seems from the Shankara, they're very strict sannyasis. But he asked, and they told him in Sanskrit, that you find that house where the parrots outside are discussing what is svata pramana, parata pramana. What is the nature of cognition? Is it something in our mind, or is what we perceive due to what's there, or is it due to what we perceive? These kind of discussions in the Mimamsa school. There's division. Svata pramana, what we perceive in our mind, and is the cowness of a cow due to what we perceive, or is it due to something inherent in the cow? These kind of discussions are going on. Not in Vrindavan. Then you have to go north a little bit. Come north from Mahishmati, and come north. Then you can. Then what else is there? Vaidya Sang Padak. Sangha Parakramasha. Then Dhana Vasita Tadgate. That was the complaint of the gopis. That was the complaint. You see, the yogis, they meditated upon him in their hearts, and you're talking all these talks about us, and we know Krishna, the Vyasadeva calls him Yogeshvara, Yatra Yogeshvara, Krishna, Yatra Partha Dana Daraha, Tatra Shri Vijayo Buddha, Dhruva Niti Matila. He's the Yogeshvara, the supreme among all the yogis. They don't want him as Yogeshvara. Yogi Nara Narayan, he doesn't marry any women. But yeah. They're afraid. What is this? Naranarayana. We don't want to hear about that. He's not impressed. Naranarayana was not impressed. They brought all the beautiful girls from Indra's court. And he looked at them, said, "Oh, you like beautiful women? Okay, have a few more." And then he manifested worldly women far more beautiful than any Indra had imagined, or even Kamadev had imagined. He said, "You like? Okay, take one of them." He wasn't interested. But what if Radha had come? Then he'd be caught. But Radha doesn't go there. He doesn't go to Bhadrika Ashram. Uddhava has to go there to preach to all the people. So the gopi, the same complaint. They weren't happy with Krishna. He left them and then sent all this talk about, in the Ras Leela, first of all, Krishna spoke about all this philosophy and here he goes again. Okay, all right, can we dance now? Okay, let's get going. Then again he sends Uddhava to talk all this philosophy, all this stuff. So when they met him at Kurukshetra, they complained to him. There's one verse which is it's the key to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. It's the key to then the feelings of the gopis. What is that verse? It's not a very well-known verse, actually. It comes, the gopis at Kurukshetra, in a roundabout way, they complained to Krishna. Ahushchate, they said, the gopis said, Ahushchate nalena nabha padaravindam yogeshvara. Hear that word, yogeshvara. Yogeshvara hridi vichintya agadha bodham. Sangsara kupa, sangsara, remember we're talking about sangsara vasana. Sangsara kupa pachit. Patitotaran avalambam geham jusham apimanas yudhyatnaha. They complained to him in a roundabout way, praising him, that you have the navel like a lotus. Mahavishnu, we know all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you're Mahavishnu. And the yogis, they meditate on your lotus feet within their hearts with very deep absorption to become lifted up from the samsara kupa, the deep dark well of material existence. But we are just housewives. What do we know about all this stuff? We're in the samsara kupa. We're not yogis. Why do you talk to us like you? We're in the samsara kupa. But we are nevertheless praying that you arise within our minds, within our hearts. So we know you're a great yogi, Krishna. You're the greatest. Okay, you're the greatest yogi. But you're not a real yogi. You're a bluffer. Mithyachara sa uchate. One who outwardly controls his senses, but in his mind, you said it yourself in the Bhagavad Gita, in which you're called Yogeshwara. That one who externally controls his senses, but internally is always thinking of sense enjoyment. He's a cheater, a bluffer. So you look very dharmic When you're in Dwaraka with all your wives following all the principles of householder life, ideal grihastha, but inside you're thinking of us, isn't it? Admit it. We are afraid to come to Vraja, because then again, samsara vasana, now you're just about managing to control your senses in Dwaraka and having a very dharmic, very properly controlled householder life, following all the rules and regulations. But within your heart, all you want to do is to come to Vrindavan. But you're afraid, then again, those samsara vasana, those deep-rooted desires for enjoyment will arise in your heart and you'll again become bewildered. You're afraid to go. But anyway, we came to pull you. You don't want to go? You do want to go. Do you want to go? Of course you do. Do you want to go? No, I got my friends, family, how can I? Then pull them. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the core of his pastimes. He's pulling Jagannaths. Jagannaths, you come. Forget all this Jagannath business. You have to again become Gopinaths. Let the Jagat, they call him Parameshwara, right, Lord Shiva. Let him look after that. Vishwanath. You come here and be Vrajanath. You come here and be Gopinath. That was their prayer. Just one correction from yesterday. I said that Gaur Bhagavan, that's not there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually it is. That is the Mahaprabhu Bhakta Gaurneya Bhairagya Pradhan Jaha Deki Prita on Gaura Bhagavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees, in their character, the detachment is prominent, is chief. Seeing this, Gaura Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, he's very pleased. Supreme Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah, so. But that's in relation with Madhavendra Puri. But anyway, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not portrayed exactly in the same way as Chaitanya Bhagavan. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada. I better say that again. Well, first of all, Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukharo na vayam vichara valaya hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutami natama nirvishama. Hare Krishna.